And with our guest, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, we're going to take your phone calls, and we'll also find out how he became an astronaut when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dr. Edgar Mitchell will take your phone calls. Edgar, let's finish the story on how you became an astronaut.
Okay, well, surely. I was on my way back from duty in the Pacific aboard a carrier to test pilot duty. I'd been out two tours and went back to test pilot duty. Sputnik went up at that point. I realized humans would be right behind robot craft. And that seemed, even though I wasn't really planning on a military career, nor an aviation career, it seemed that going to space might be a place to do. So I reoriented my career, got more education, including a PhD, and was eventually selected into the Apollo program in 1966.
Was it a tough program when you were in it? I mean, were there people who dropped out, they just couldn't take it?
Well, I think the selection process was quite good, and by and large, we had a few people drop out for their own reasons, and I don't quite know the circumstances of that. But once you were selected and went to work, we all worked pretty hard, that is true. And we lost a few people along the way for a number of different reasons, like all humans. But if you stayed in there and worked hard, you were going to eventually get to fly.
Did you have family? Were you married when you went to the moon?
Yes, I had a wife and two daughters at that time, and of course they're all grown up now and have their own families, and I have wonderful children and wonderful grandchildren. I have additional children, adopted children, so all together I have six children and nine grandchildren adopted in bio, and they're all wonderful human beings.
Good for you. Do you remember the goodbye with the wife, the moment you walked out of the door and had to go to Kennedy, Cape Canaveral?
I will say that the wonderful ladies of the space program endured a great deal, and they endured it well, and they were a credit to us, to the nation, and to womanhood, at the way they had to put up with all sorts of inconveniences and being away from home. As it turns out, in those days, as I recall the numbers, for NASA, after a few years, the divorce rate exceeded that of medical doctors, which was the high point.
Yeah.
Because it was such an arduous, everyone was so devoted to getting the job done. It was a very strenuous and arduous assignment.
How long did you have to train from the moment they named you as an astronaut until the Apollo 14 mission?
Well, I entered in 1966 with a group that came in 66. We had technical assignments and training and technical assignments to accomplish. And then I flew in January of 1971, so that was 5 years later.
And then retired from the Navy, what?
I retired after the flight. After I had backed up Apollo 16 and the final three flights of the Apollo program were canceled. So we didn't fly the last three, which I had hoped to be another flight on, but no one got to get on walk on the moon twice. And the public was rather, said, okay, ho-hum, been there, done that. And we canceled. The program was canceled at that point.
Did you want to? You wanted to go back, though?
Oh, well, of course. As a scientist, we had just barely begun the chore of exploring the moon and starting to get some better information about it and understanding our neighbor here. But that's when it all ended. And all of us would have liked to have continued that, and certainly the scientists wanted to continue exploring the moon, and we didn't do that.
What did you find to be one of the most fascinating things on the moon? I mean, was it the rock, the craters, the pocket of craters? Was there any one thing that stood out?
Well, to me, it's just nature itself, understanding nature, how all of this came to be, how matter organized has organized itself. And of course, from following my experience in space and coming back to understand, okay, why are we conscious at all? That the stories of ourselves that we passed down for centuries and generations, maybe we should relook at that in the light of modern knowledge and the fact that we are now a spacefaring civilization.
When you were standing on the moon, Edgar, how deep is the dust into your shoes, into your boots?
Not bad. We prepared in the early days, you know, we had the big foot pads on the lunar lander just in case it was soft and we would sink in. But a couple of inches was about the furthest, unless you're right on the edge of a fresh crater. A couple of inches on the surface, or sometimes just a half an inch, depending upon how rocky it was at that point.
Were you careful that you didn't hit what could have been a sinkhole, for example?
We didn't notice anything like that. There wasn't anything obvious.
How quiet, aside from you talking to Alan Shepard, how quiet is it out there?
Well, since there's virtually no sound whatsoever, since there's no air to carry sound.
But you didn't hear anything hit the planet or anything like that?
The only thing we did hear in the spacecraft itself, we occasionally heard something like a micrometeorite hitting the spacecraft, a little ping sort of sound, but that wasn't very frequent. We can't prove this, but it seemed like that was probably some very small cosmic particle or solar particle.
They were little extraterrestrials on the moon throwing rocks at you.
Right, something like that.
How many days were you on the moon, Edgar?
Well, we were there 2 days. We were 34 hours, actually, total from landing to launch on our mission, including two periods outside of almost 5 hours apiece. So we were walking on the surface almost 10 hours and on the moon totally in the spacecraft and out a total of 34 hours.
Was it strange sleeping and waking up knowing you were on the moon?
Yes, it was. We had the little problem. We landed a little bit on a slope, and a few degrees slope, the spacecraft was kind of tilted, and that gave you the feeling that we were tipping over. Now, we knew we weren't, but you had to look out the window ever so often and make sure, hey, is this thing still stable? So it was not a good night's sleep that we had. However, it was adequate. We did sleep and got our job done.
Do you remember leaving the surface of the moon? What kind of feeling is that?
Well,
was there like incredible thrust?
I'm sorry?
Was there incredible thrust? What's it feel like?
I didn't get that word.
The thrust as the rocket took off.
No, that wasn't so much, because the moon's gravitation is, of course, 1/6 that here on Earth.
Right.
So you didn't need that much thrust to get up into orbit. But our spacecraft was a sporty little vehicle, as all of them were, and so it jumped right off of there pretty nicely.
And off you went.
Off we went.
Let's take some calls. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with Dr. Edgar Mitchell on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is me.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you to both of you, and I'm just amazed I'm even speaking with you. I wanted to ask the doctor, if you were on, say you were on your deathbed, God forbid you don't, but and your child was there, not all of humanity, just your child, what would be the most important thing you'd want to pass on to them?
Well, it depends on what was the condition at that time. But if it was where we are right now, if we're in time soon, I would be saying working toward the service to the greater good, the service to humankind, and to preserve, making our civilization sustainable, which is what I work at every day right now.
God bless you. And I have to say, I'd hate to be your wife having to sit there and watch you take off into space.
The women
must have been terrifying.
They did. They were wonderful. And it was difficult for them. That is true.
Oh, sure was. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi. Hello.
Oh, am I on?
Yes, you sure are. Gotcha.
Yes. I wanted to ask Edgar about something about the materialization experiences he had with Uri Geller at Stanford Research Institute. you know, without wanting to discount the possibility that those were genuine cases of materialization, wondering if Edgar has considered the possibility that there was trickery involved there, possibly that Yuri was subjected to as well, and maybe others. I've read that SRI was connected with the CIA and various other intelligence organizations.
Well, I'll answer your question right off the bat, because we had some very competent people there, including all of the scientists and some who were very well-trained magicians and very well-trained in these types of spook activities. And the answer is no. It was all very bona fide.
All right, thanks.
All sorts of precautions were taken.
Wildcard line, your turn. Where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Bill from Long Island.
Hi, Bill. Thank you.
Mr. Mitchell, I have two questions. One is, what is energy? Every definition ends up sort of being circular or redundant. And if you say it's the capacity for doing work, it turns out that work is defined in terms of a force, and then force in terms of energy. And I know we can describe the properties associated with it, like velocity and temperature, but science can't seem to define it in terms of something more basic than itself. And my other question is that NASA has come out and said not only is the Earth heating up, but all the planets in our solar system. I saw a panel of scientists that said we're heading down to the gravitational plane of the black hole. And as we get approach it around 212, or possibly 10 years later, we're definitely going to go into a pole shift. And they say it has proof that it happened three times already in the past. I'd like to hear your comments on that, sir.
Well, first of all, I did not get the first word. Was the gentleman asking about entropy? Is that the word?
Energy. Wanted to know what your take was on just what is energy.
Oh, okay. That's a good question, because no one really knows what energy is. It's action principle that causes things to happen. And we can write equations for it and how it relates to other things. But what is it? I don't have the faintest idea, and neither does anyone else. Now, I know that you cited some very far-out speculations on cosmological speculations, and no one, some of these far-out ones are, I don't think, very credible. However, there is a lot that we simply don't know about the way the universe is put together, and we're learning more every day, but we're still just barely out of the woods. We're very juvenile and still uneducated, unknowledgeable species. Hopefully, if we don't get ourselves killed off through our own misfortune and stupidities, that give us another century or so, we'll have a lot better handle on how this universe is put together.
Now, what do you think, though, Edgar, about this universal warming, apparently, that might be going on?
Okay, well, there's not any doubt, but what I personally made a trip to Antarctica just this year to talk with naturalists there. There is no question but what we're undergoing climate change, and there may certainly be a natural portion of it. We can't do much about that. What we can do is what we're contributing to it. That's the only thing we can really change at this point. And we better darn well take a look at what we're doing and our contribution to it, because it's becoming very serious. And I would urge all of our listeners to take a look at the new movie just put out by Leo DiCaprio called The 11th Hour. It's just come out. I saw it just recently, right on target, and we need to pay attention.
Wildcard line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Stephen from Los Angeles.
Hey, Stephen. Thank you.
First, I'd like to express how much respect I have for your guest. The astronauts, when I was growing up in my generation, were just the greatest of men. And your credibility is such that you made a statement that really floored me. You said, I believe, that the guardians of the reverse engineering of alien technology were the ones that Eisenhower referred to as the military-industrial complex. Is that what you said?
That is what many people interpret Eisenhower to have meant, is to that the military-industrial complex and embodied in new technologies, and in particularly warlike technologies, and for warlike purposes, was the thing to be concerned about. And I believe that to be true.
Do you think that that group was the beginning of a shadow government?
I won't say a shadow government, but certainly a group that has technologies and that has been very much involved continuously in the so-called UFO cover-up and misinformation and disinformation that's come out of that.
I've come to realize recently how subtle and how pervasive the disinformation program has been.
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and good questions there, Stephen. Wild card line, you're up. You're on with Dr. Mitchell on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. We're all well.
I'm Scott from Barrington, Rhode Island. I just had a quick comment to make to Mr. Mitchell, and then I'll let you go. I know as a child when I was growing up, I just turned 50 this year, and as a child growing up, I was a firm believer of the space program, and there wasn't anything that I didn't watch on TV. I watched Neil Armstrong, place his feet on the moon, and I watched all the other Apollo missions, and I sent a letter to Alan Shepard years ago, and I actually got a response back from him, and I wanted to know what I could do to become an astronaut. Of course, my dreams were then, as they are now, to be an astronaut, but his words, and I don't have the letter in front of me, was, put as much faith as you can in whatever you want to accomplish, and your dreams will come true. And I've tried to follow that with myself and also with my kids, and as I was going through my papers the other day, and I happened to come across the letter from Alan Shepard, and I showed it to my son and my daughter. I said, this is amazing that, I have this to show you, that just follow your stars and shoot for the stars and just go for whatever you want to go for and just don't give up. And the only comment that I wanted to make is that the many hours that I have spent reading and watching you on TV and just watching the astronauts, I just want you to know that the many hours that I've had, I'm very proud of the fact of our space program and our government and the astronauts for giving me the dreams and the realization that if we shoot for the stars, we can get what we want.
Thank you very much. And that's what many of us say all the time when we're asked those questions. Follow your passion, do the best you can, get educated, and go for it. And that's what you should do.
There you have it, Edgar. And, when you, I guess, do you get recognized much?
Beg your pardon?
Do you get recognized much when you're on the streets?
Yes, I do. I used to more when I very deliberately try to stay out of the public eye. But occasionally I get recognized when I'm walking down the streets of New York. It has happened.
Well, you are an American hero, Edgar. No doubt about it. Stay with us. We'll be back with Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, I'll have open lines, just you and me. But when we come back, it'll be final phone calls with Dr. Edgar Mitchell on Coast to Coast AM. Edgar, what's your take on the shuttle? Do you think they should be mothballed or repaired, or what's your views?
Well, it's really a safety question. If, I'm not involved in the day-to-day operation and looking at them. But we still need that truck in the space as long as they are functional and safe to fly. We've been having increasing problems with them. Not being close to it, I would hesitate to make a judgment. But we do need the space presence, and we don't have the replacement vehicle yet. I'd hate to see us stop activities continues altogether till we get the right vehicle. I know it's already at work, but we still need this vehicle as long as it'll service.
How about the International Space Station? Do you see that as being worthwhile at all?
Of course. It is a part of our presence in space. There's work going on there that's appropriate. If we're going to continue to move toward our destiny of using space as the next frontier, which it should be, just as the first Phoenicians used their frail boats to start exploring the Mediterranean, and the South Sea Islanders in their dugout started exploring the Great Pacific. We need to continue doing this. We're just we're destined, I believe, to go further, and we're not going to do it without the proper equipment.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Tom, and I'm from Corning, California.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
And I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. First of all, I want to start off by saying I'm very honored to get to speak with somebody of such a stature as Mr. Mitchell. My question is have you heard anything about the aerogel and whether or not you know if they've considered using that as a type of protective shielding for, like, the space station or the shuttlecraft against micrometeors or radiation, stuff like that?
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that technology.
Aerogel. Yeah, that's supposed to be the latest. I don't know, Tom, if it'll really be implemented or not, but they're kicking it around. Okay, thanks for the call. Wildcard line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Yes, sir.
Pleasure to speak with you. Good morning, Commander. It's nice to be able to speak to you, too. I have a real short question, and my question is this, sir. Would there be any kind of prints, I don't care if it was crawling, any kind of little prints that would make us believe that there possibly could be life on the moon? And I'll take my call off the air, and thank you so much for taking my call.
Okay, so anything out there, Edgar, that would have led you or anybody else to believe
that? Nothing that I'm aware of.
Nothing.
It just simply doesn't have the necessary ingredients for life to have formed there at all, even though there may be some on Mars at that point from that ancient time, but that's even problematic. But certainly I know of no evidence at all of any standing that would suggest a life on the moon.
You didn't see any little worm marks or anything like
that, huh? No, not a thing.
Nothing unusual. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning. Rick in Toronto on 640.
Hi, Rick.
Dr. Mitchell, how much air was in each backpack in terms of time, and how many backpacks were there in the module?
Well, we only had one each. We didn't have any spares. You just replenished your air supply and water supply consumables when you went back into the spacecraft, from the spacecraft to reservoir. We had roughly, on our mission, 5 hours available with just a tiny bit of reserve on that, just a few minutes. So 5 hours was our limit, and we programmed our EVAs to 4.5 hours, and we routinely got an extension for another almost 20 minutes or so. So we were right at the
Yeah, cut it pretty close, Edgar, didn't you?
It was cutting it pretty close, that's true.
Well, okay, I guess you answered his question. First-time caller line. Hi there, you're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, this is Joel from Brooklyn. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. I have a question for either one of you to answer. Could you guys explain the parallel universe to me?
The what, please?
Well, it all depends if there is a parallel universe or not, Joe. I will take a stab at that, Edgar, if you do not want to.
Well, of course, parallel is a theoretical concept, but there's universes that, and I'm not quite sure how you would define one of them, because we use universe to mean all it is, but if there are systems of galaxies and astronomical structures that are totally independent of what we would call a universe, that I guess you could call that a parallel universe.
Some physicists are believing more now than ever that there are parallel universes, that they may echo this universe. Maybe there's another talk show going on right now there with both of us, Edgar. Who knows?
Well, I agree that that is one of the theoretical constructs that's going around as a result of a many-world interpretation in quantum mechanics. And I do not doubt that there are billions and billions and many, many star system galaxies I don't know whether it's appropriate to call him another universe or not. That remains for the future to determine. I personally don't go that route.
Edgar, do you believe that in the future we will have time travel?
No, I do not. I think that what we're talking about here is a holdover from Newtonian times, and that the that the major processes in the universe at the macro scale level are all nonlinear, irreversible processes, the ones that are really germane to our existence. And I think that this time symmetry that's still prevalent in some of quantum physics work has simply got to go away in due course.
Next up, Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
This is Shannon from Austin, Texas.
Hey, Shannon. Go ahead.
Dr. Mitchell, I have come upon some information regarding the fact that there is, in fact, a replacement vehicle already in use, making routine trips to the International Space Station. It takes off like a plane. Both the Air Force space program and the Russian space program have this technology and have been using it for years. Do you have any knowledge of that?
No, I have no knowledge of that. If that's true, I don't believe that's true, but there's a lot of things I don't know of, so.
Well, I gained this information from a friend of mine who just recently retired from the Air Force and was heavily involved in some very top secret flights. So,
what did he describe? What kind of craft is it?
Well, it's large enough to it takes off like a plane and can go directly into low Earth orbit, just like the space station and just like the shuttle does. And it's large enough to be able to pick up all of the astronauts in the event of, well, like on our last flight, we had the busted tile. If there was some need to, they could have been pulled off of the space shuttle right then and there and brought back down to Earth. But they would have had to come up with some kind of a cover story as to how they got down.
Where does this craft land when it comes back?
Typically out in the desert, just like all the other, like all the other military stuff that takes off. He said that the Russians also use the same thing to get their cosmonauts off the space station.
I think that's just total nonsense. Sorry.
You don't believe it? Then
I don't believe it for one instant. Now, I will go so far to say it is quite possible that some of the so-called UFO sightings of recent years may be homegrown stuff, but I'm pretty sure that there's not an unknown vehicle associated with both the Soviets and ourselves that are not aware, not in the public domain. I don't believe that's true.
Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Greg from Urbana, Illinois.
Hi, Greg.
Hey, listen, Georgia, and Ed, I was just wondering, once and for all, maybe you could answer, how far did Alan's golf ball go?
Okay, that's simple enough. There's pictures to show it. His golf ball is out there about 50 feet or so in a near crater, and my javelin is about 5 or 6 inches further than the golf ball, and we have pictures of that. It's nice to say it went miles and miles, and I asked Alan to, after each time it got a little bit further of miles and miles and then miles and miles and miles and add a few more miles, I said, I think miles and miles is quite enough, and I'd pull up the picture. It's about 50 feet out there in the crater.
And he must have been in one of the world's biggest sand traps, huh?
That's exactly right.
Let's go to our first time.
It's pretty hard to hit a golf ball, though, in a pressure suit with one swinging with one hand instead of two.
Yep. If you, because I noticed how you had those hops, but could you run in that suit on the moon at all?
Well, run, you could make some fast strides and kind of bounce along. But each one of us learned to find a gait and a way of moving that was comfortable for us. And it was a bunny hop or a kind of a bouncing stride, kind of like walking on, you can practice on a trampoline. That's about as good a stimulation as you can get here on Earth.
When you came back, were your legs wobbly?
No. No, not at all. The only thing, if you don't exercise enough coming back, you may be a little weak, and it takes a day or so to get over it. But we're in pretty good shape.
I mean, you were gone for what? It was a 9-day mission, wasn't it?
9 days, 1 minute, and some 40 seconds.
What about weight loss? Did you lose any weight?
We were one of the first crews where they really were concerned about that. And so we had to stuff food a little bit to keep the docs happy. But I think as I recall, our weight was pretty close to where we launched.
Well, that's pretty good. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there. Go ahead.
Who, me? Jonathan?
Yes, sir.
Go Jonathan Klipstein, Frederick, Maryland.
Okay.
Am I on?
Yeah, I believe you are.
Okay, great, great. Hey, I'm glad I got through to you guys. Dr. Mitchell, George. Okay. Hey, I want to talk to you just for a second here. I'd like to talk to you for like a couple hours about the phenomena with Uri Geller, the many different phenomena. That everything pertaining to Uri seems to me to be on the, what do you want to call it, that on the metaphysical side, the inanimate, dead objects pertaining to anything that had to do with the bending of spoons, anything, deportation and the whole bit. But I want to tell this to you and everybody listening now. There are people truly on this earth now that have made a contact with the higher kingdom or what people call heaven that do have phenomenal gifts and abilities. I myself as one, and there are others. We are living proof.
What do you do with this gift?
I'm a telepath. I can communicate to whole cities of people. I can tell you this. I'm in Frederick, Maryland right now. I am one of them that is the proof that when we do touch the other side of the kingdom, that we call the creator or whatever,
right,
we are given ability. These abilities are the proof and the truth, the kingdom of God.
Well, what kind of telepathy do you practice, Sir John?
Telepathy, I am a communicator. I have what would be known as the voice like John the Baptist had, to be able to talk to people off in the distance, instruct them, give them education, intelligence, or whatever, et cetera. I've had this for 32 years.
Well, I got to tell you, I don't doubt the fact that there are some people on this planet that have these kinds of abilities. I mean, we practice it with our own intuitiveness, Edgar, and everything else. Whether he is or not, I don't know, but I'm sure some people could do it, don't you?
Oh, yes, I've studied many, many telepaths and people with exceptional gifts, as far as I know, at the moment, even though we can't, in science, we can't absolutely describe these perfectly. We're getting pretty close at this point in time.
Let's go west of the Rockies. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi. Kat from Lava Hot Springs, Idaho.
Okay.
Good evening, George and Dr. Mitchell. You almost answered my question. I needed to know if you had any health effects from going out into space.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand the question.
She said, did you have any health effects going out into space?
Oh, health effects. No, as far as we know, we're still monitoring in a longevity study. And we all...
Are you still part of a study at this point?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Been going on forever. And as far as I know, we're still kind of the epitome of healthy specimens.
Part of the argument of those who say we didn't go to the moon, that you had to go through the Van Allen belt, the radiation belt, and there's no way you could have survived it. How do you answer that one?
Well, all I can say is we're here.
Still alive and kicking.
Yeah.
Let's take another caller. Wildcard line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. What a treat to have Edward Mitchell on air, a true patriot there. Anyway,
yes, indeed.
You know what? It's sort of strange that you're saying again that everything in the military isn't in that's available to public domain. You misspoke there, because the SR-71 is flying around for 15 years without the public knowledge of knowing about that. So there's a lot of things in the military. I've worked as a contractor building military stuff, and I won't go into any details.
Well, he didn't say there weren't experimental aircraft that we don't know about. He said that the one that is going off to the International Space Station doesn't exist.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I could understand that. Okay. Yeah. That sounds fine. Okay. Anyway, I was just wondering. There's one of the world's greatest psychics / remote viewers, named Ingo Swann. He wrote a book called Penetration. You could buy it on eBay for about $300 or $400. It's a soft cover magazine, basically not really a book, but he wrote in that magazine that's so well sought after. He remote viewed the moon, and this world class psychic that's connected to the CIA and the U.S. military. He's so good. He actually saw and placed in this book, believe it or not, factories. Okay, factories of some sort of biological robots or some sort of non-human existence on that planet, the planet Moon, manufacturing something. And he put that in his book, and he's been criticized a lot by it, and the government actually gave him a lot of hell from putting out that book. That's why it's so sought after. It wasn't reprinted again. And I was wondering, what do you think about Ingo Swann and his story about possibly an intelligent life form or something they're building, maybe human souls or something? He said something about the human soul was being manufactured there.
That they're stored out there and stuff. Go ahead. We've got a minute left, Edgar. Go ahead.
I know Ingo, and he's a very, very fine, sensitive, has great intuitions. I think that one's a very far stretch and way off the mark. I don't think that's quite correct.
Though there could be some structures
on the
moon.
Evidence. We don't have evidence for that.
That's what it all comes down to. It really does. And, you know, if there are structures on the moon, as some people believe, well, I'd like to see some more pictures, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we just have to have some more evidence for it. The truth.
What was, very quickly, the strangest thing you and Alan saw on the moon?
Well, I think the strangest thing we saw on the moon was the moon itself. Nobody's ever been to that location, and looking at that and studying the geology, we were the first team to start to do real experimental work on the moon and to do the first geological trek up Cone Crater. So I would have to say, in direct response to your question, where we were itself was the strangest thing.
Just the moon. Edgar, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're welcome. Good to be with you.
Yeah, always. And Edgar's website, edmitchellapollo14.com. Go take a look at it. Go take a look at some of his work as well. I'll be back in a moment. We've got open lines next on Coast to Coast AM.